We're ready to hear the case of Puitt versus Wilson. Ms. Donnelly?
Good afternoon. I'm going to focus on the first argument in our brief. Mr. Puitt's execution would violate the Eighth Amendment because he is mentally retarded.
I don't know whether I'm getting deaf or you're not close enough to the microphone.
Okay. Is it better?
Better.
Thank
you. You can move it. You know, it's kind of a flexible sort of goofy thing on it.
Of course, that doesn't preclude us from getting into some of the other issues.
Absolutely not.
All right.
And regarding mental retardation, I'm going to continue to refer to this condition as mental retardation, although the AMR has changed the title to the label to intellectual disability, yes. And one of the reasons that they changed the label is because to deal with the stigma that is associated with the label mental retardation. People have misperceptions, stereotypes about mentally retarded individuals. They think they, for example, can't do anything. They can't drive. They can't get a job. They can't learn anything. This is absolutely untrue. Mentally retarded individuals are perfectly capable of doing, they do face challenges functioning in society, but they are capable of doing that. And I mention this because in the Indiana Supreme Court's opinion here, and the state court's opinion here, relying on these stereotypes, misperceptions about the testing, misperceptions about what mentally retarded people can do is the basis of the opinion, and that's the reason we believe it is unreasonable. I'm going to begin with a discussion of the testing.
Have all the medical authorities agreed on what the definition of the problems is?
Yes. The AMR, which is now called the AAIDD.
The definition of the disease or mental disability he suffers from?
Yes, both the AMR and the American Psychological Association have one definition for mental retardation.
I mean, of the people who examine them, is everybody coming to the same conclusion?
All of the experts that...
No, the question is capable of a yes or no answer. Did all of them agree on the diagnosis?
All of them did not agree on the diagnosis.
Pardon?
All of them did not agree on the diagnosis.
So the answer is no.
Right.
Okay.
They did all agree. All experts who examined him agreed. Mental retardation has two prongs, three. The significant subaverage intellectual functioning and significant deficits in adaptive behavior. And then this must manifest before the age of 18 under the clinical definitions or 22 under Indiana's rule. All the experts who examined him for adaptive functioning agreed that he met the clinical standards there, that he was definitely had significant deficits there.
But the specific diagnosis as to what the mental problem was is different from doctor to doctor.
It's different from one doctor versus four other doctors. One doctor
right,
believed
but even so, your burden, the row you have to hoe, is a pretty tough one to convince us that the Indiana Supreme Court's determination here was unreasonable, right?
Well, we have to meet the AEDPA standard, and that is deliberately meant to be difficult.
But what you have to show us is that their view of the evidence with respect to that standard was an unreasonable view. Isn't that what you have to show us?
Well, we have to show that there was an unreasonable determination of the facts. The decision
right.
was based on an unreasonable
right.
determination of the facts
right.
in light of the evidence that was presented. Or,
let's focus in on that. That's,
okay.
Yeah.
That's where you need to go.
Yeah, because even if we conclude that the Indiana Supreme Court should have given zero weight to some of the factors, like the fact that he had a job, and he could support himself, there were other factors, his academic tests, his IQ scores, and his educational background, which suggested he was not mentally retarded.
Well, I would respectfully disagree that evidence suggested he was not mentally retarded, just as the four mental retardation experts disagreed that evidence did not suggest he was mentally retarded. Mr. Puitt had three standardized individually administered IQ tests is the acceptable method for ascertaining whether or not a person is mentally retarded. 64, 65, and 76. 64 and 65 unquestionably fit within the definition of mentally retarded. The only other score that is inconsistent with that, the only valid score based on an IQ test, that is a test designed to measure IQ that is reliable and accepted in the community, was the 76 on the WAIS. But the experts, again, the mental retardation experts, including the expert who administered the test, Dr. Overa, believed that that score was not inconsistent with the other scores. It should not be a reliable basis for ruling out mental retardation. And they gave several reasons for that. One was because there were different tests he was administered. He was administered the Stanford-Binet, which Dr. Hudson and Dr. Golding both testified was more sensitive to individuals with lower IQs. And that is verified by the AAMR.
What was it, the Overa score alone that the Indiana Supreme Court used to rule that out?
No, it was not the Overa score alone. The other score, the other information they used, what they did was defer to the trial court, the trial judge. And what the trial judge said was, he got his commercial driver's license, he filled out a job application, and then he looked at the score such as the beta score. This is the evidence was by Dr. Schmedlin that the beta score was a reliable test, and he had obtained it, I believe it was a 93 on this test. There's overwhelming evidence that the beta score cannot be reliably compared to a WAIS score. You cannot look at that score and say, this is comparable, this is reliable determination. It's a test that's 30 years old and hasn't been normed in 30 years. It is a test that was developed in World War II. It is only a nonverbal test. I mean, understanding why this is so, I believe, unreasonable, not just wrong, but unreasonable, requires an understanding of what the testing is supposed to do. When we say a person has an IQ of 70 to 75, this is in the mentally retarded range. Okay, this is what Indiana has set.
Right, and it's not a hard cutoff like Florida's, right? It's that range of 70 to 75.
Indiana would appear to be taking into account the SEM by adopting the range, whereas Florida, in the Hall case, that gentleman had no score that was 70 or below. He had five scores, 71, 72, 73, 74, and 80. And in that case, Florida said, well, since you have no score 70 or below, we're not going to consider any of that evidence of mental retardation.
It's not that rigid. In
no. Indiana.
Yeah. No, finish that.
Well, what I was getting at is...
Well, let me get, before you get to that. So
okay.
In terms of Hall, which the oral arguments were heard in March, I just want to know your opinion of whether you think we should hold off any final ruling in our case until Hall is decided. Do you think it might shed any light here on this issue?
Well, I think, although the factual pattern scenario in Hall is different, and it is the debate there is solely about the SEM, I think the court, based on the oral argument and the briefing in that case, apparently may very well address issues that are relevant to this case. Specifically, the debate that in this case as to whether or not how far a court can go in departing from the clinical definitions. That was directly at issue there. Regarding that, and this is similar to what they were arguing in Hall, IQ tests are, those scores, 70 to 75, are based on certain assumptions. What they're actually saying with that is that it's a score that is two standard deviations below the mean. That assumes that the test that is being administered has a population mean of 100, that it's a standardized test, that's two standard deviations below the mean is in fact 70. And that test has been recently normed so that we can have a degree of confidence in that. It also presumes that you understand the conditions under which the tests were taken. Was it a group test versus an individual test? Because a group test is much less reliable because we don't know the circumstances. It presumes that the test was designed to measure intellectual functioning. Academic achievement tests that are designed to measure something else, that are compared against a group of individuals who in the same grade who may be younger, are in no way comparable to an IQ test. An IQ test is normed against the population and very testing of very specific skill sets. So to take someone and say, well, they've got to be in a class, or they got a score of this on a particular, another type of test that was designed for a different purpose, let alone the fact that it may have been a group administered test, let alone the fact that it may have been 20 years ago, and we don't know what the standardization sample was, we don't know what the standard deviation was, we don't know what the population mean was for that test, all of these things are unanswered. And that was one of the biggest problems here, for them to take a beta, or the Otis Letting, or the Iowa Test of Basic Skills, and just compare them across the board as if an 80 on this test means the exact same thing as an 80 would mean on an IQ test.
Of course, it was Mr. Pruitt's burden to prove by a preponderance that he qualified for the exemption.
Yes, he did, and he presented evidence about this, what I am talking about, through Dr. Golding, and later through also through Dr. Hudson and through Dr. Keyes.
Let me ask you this. Was Pruitt on Trilofan the entire time he was incarcerated?
No.
And was he on the drug when he took the other test? Was he on Trilofan?
He was not on it when he took...
Any other kind of drug when he took the other test?
Not when he took the WACE, and that was also discussed by the second WACE, where he scored a 52 that Dr. Schmedlin administered.
Right. So what do we make of the fact that the scores went down each time he took the test from April 02 to July 03?
Well, the score went down on the WACE, which was considered the second WACE, the one that Dr. Schmedlin administered. We think because he was experiencing a great deal of anxiety at the time. Now, Dr. Schmedlin's description of that was, well, he wasn't exhibiting as much effort as he should. He had testified later at the post-conviction, and this was in Exhibit 41, that was not meant to be synonymous with malingering. Well, he just said he didn't know why. Dr. Hudson and Dr. Golding opined that they looked at the subtest on that on the WACE, and they said, well, some of the tests, the ones that are particularly sensitive to anxiety, were very unstable, whereas the ones that tests that were not as sensitive to that were stable with the other test. So he was transported to Ohio. That's their assumption. He was no longer taking the medication. We don't know for a fact that that is exactly what caused it, but that was their opinion.
So I want to move to the issue of adequate investigation and presentation of evidence during the penalty phase of the trial. Did Pruitt's trial counsel ever ask Dr. Golden, to examine Pruitt for schizophrenia?
No.
Did he ask any other doctor to examine Pruitt for schizophrenia?
No.
Did Pruitt's trial counsel ever ask any doctor to examine Pruitt for mental illness as opposed to mental retardation? That seems a little unclear in the record in terms of what was asked of Golden.
Dr. Golding's examination was for mental retardation.
Right.
When Dr. Golding testified, he was asked to look at the records and to describe his mental condition. So it wasn't the same as having him examined, but the trial counsel did say, we want to present this evidence of mental illness in addition to the mental retardation.
Did the doctors interview Pruitt themselves, each doctor?
The doctors interviewed Pruitt except for Dr. Groff.
Did they examine him for what purpose?
All of the experts that were asked to examine him were examining him for the purpose of determining whether or not he was mentally retarded. Some of the examiners additionally noted, Drs. Olvera and Dr. Hudson, that they saw symptoms that he might be experiencing schizophrenia.
It was not a general examination to find out his mental condition.
No, and it's important because the examination for mental retardation... Okay. Sorry.
It's important or it's not important, depending on who's listening.
Okay.
It is. I want to know whether or not they were examining, looking for something specific, or they were just a general examination, hoping to find a diagnosis that was consistent with their examination.
They began by having Dr. Olvera administer tests to determine his intellectual functioning. They hired a neuropsychologist thereafter who did both a neuropsychological examination.
When you say who, tell me who.
Trial counsel. Or I'm sorry.
Who examined?
Okay.
You start out saying they.
I'm sorry.
They.
Trial counsel asked Dr. Overa to examine Mr. Pruitt for mental retardation. He administered the WACE test, the first IQ test.
And the doctor accepted this assignment by saying he would not look for anything else?
Actually, that's not true. Dr. Overa specifically told trial counsel, I think you should have him examined by an expert in schizophrenia because I think he may be psychotic.
And that's the issue I want to get to.
Okay.
Because it seemed that there was not a focus on his mental illness by trial counsel. And so it seems that Dr. Golden was, as you said, he was just asked about it on the stand.
Correct.
He was not said, you know, he didn't, so it wasn't even look for mental retardation and then counsel, oh, by the way, check out whether or not he was schizophrenic.
Right. He didn't
even. As I understand it, there had been a IDOC diagnosis for schizophrenia, right?
Absolutely.
And so counsel knew about this pre-trial.
Yes.
And Olivera, like you said, recommended a consult in psychosis and schizophrenia.
Yes.
And Hudson noticed that Pruitt was psychotic and testified to that during the pretrial hearing.
Yes.
Now, so the opposing counsel says that, well, since Golden testified about paranoia, there was no harm from the failure to get a specific evaluation for schizophrenia.
Well, I disagree with that. There was harm.
Because Golden commented about how his condition had deteriorated.
He did comment, but he was also very clear that he did not believe Mr. Pruitt suffered from schizophrenia, that he did not believe Mr. Pruitt was experiencing psychotic symptoms, he wasn't even clear that he believed he had schizotypal personality disorder. He actually went and said, well, I think most appropriately would be personality disorder, not otherwise specified. I mean, he was very unclear across the board about what the diagnosis was. The only thing he was clear about is it wasn't schizophrenia, and Mr. Pruitt was not psychotic at the time of the offense.
Well, and trial counsel at the pretrial stage said he wanted to show in the penalty phase, I mean, at some point he mentioned that when we got to penalty, now this is post-conviction, that he wanted to show Pruitt was mentally retarded as well as crazy.
Yes,
right?
That's correct.
Suggesting that he knew there was a psychiatric issue?
Well, he couldn't help but know there was a psychiatric issue. Pruitt had been diagnosed and family members. And so, I mean, Pruitt had a psychiatric history in his family. Pruitt had an uncle who had been hospitalized his entire life in a psychiatric hospital. And Pruitt's behavior, and as he pointed out, or was trying to point out, you know, Pruitt's behavior at the time of the offense was certainly questionable, but he was unable to offer a clear explanation of that because he had not done the initial investigation.
So now if the jury had heard the diagnostic criteria for paranoid schizophrenia and the distinction between paranoid schizophrenia versus a personality disorder, because it was labeled a personality disorder, right?
Right,
in
but it was...
the penalty phase, if they had, I mean... that's your position, that they're different and that's how he was prejudiced. But your opponents say, well, they heard all the mitigating evidence, and so what's the difference in the two labels? What significance would that have in terms of prejudice, which you'd have to reach, we'd have to reach that to rule.
Right, and in light of our Overstreet case, how don't you run right up into that?
Yes, I'm familiar with Overstreet. In Mr. Overstreet's case, the court found that the only difference was a difference in labels, that the evidence presented showed that he was schizophrenic. They even pointed out that one of the experts had diagnosed him as schizophrenic. So it was all it was calling schizophrenia by a different name. That is absolutely not what happened in this case. And one part of the evidence of that is that the trial court found that there was no mitigating evidence.
Let me be clear on this. You're not suggesting that the trial itself of the guilt or innocence phase there's anything wrong with. What you're complaining about is the imposition of the death penalty.
Yes.
That's the only thing.
Yes.
So you're not contending that there was ineffectiveness in failing to seek a guilty but mentally ill verdict?
No.
So this is strictly in the penalty phase?
In the penalty phase. In the penalty phase, they failed to present this evidence. The trial judge found that Mr. Pruitt did not suffer from a significant mental illness, that this had no mitigating weight whatsoever. The state argued that in their closing argument, that there's been no evidence presented here that he has
in their closing argument to whom?
To the jury at the penalty phase.
At the penalty phase.
Yes. And they were able to, which is interesting because the jury, during the penalty phase, the jury in Indiana is allowed to ask questions. And they asked Dr. Golding questions about whether or not he had spent any time with Mr. Pruitt examining him other than for the testing that he'd done for mental retardation, and whether he had any idea what was going on in Mr. Pruitt's mind at the time of the crime. And Dr. Golding, of course, was forced to answer no to both questions. And the state seized upon that. This doctor doesn't really know anything about what was going on in this mind. Schizophrenia is an extremely devastating illness. It is
yes,
not.
Yes, it's also extremely difficult to diagnose and to demonstrate.
It is not difficult to diagnose or to demonstrate if you are an expert who is experienced in that area.
And the experts all agree.
All three experts in this case.
No, experts agree on the ease of diagnosis of schizophrenia.
I believe experts would agree that if you are experienced.
You believe? Do you have anything to support that belief?
Well.
For instance, a number of them discuss that sort of diagnosis being a wastebasket definition. That when you don't know what else is wrong with him, you say he's schizophrenic.
Well, Your Honor.
He's acting oddly. He's off, he's obviously off the grab, but they're not sure why.
I would have to say that is outside of mainstream psychology, and schizophrenia is a very well-established diagnosis.
Well, schizotypal disorder has a number of symptoms and manifestations that very closely resemble schizophrenia. Would you agree with that?
Except for the most important ones, psychosis. And that makes all the difference.
Psychosis and paranoia.
Paranoia is the delusions.
The delusions. Because yes. Dr. Coombs, who's a psychiatrist, said that he was in paranoid schizophrenia at the time of the crime, and he concluded that he had a number of different psychiatric diagnoses, and that on the axis he was chronic paranoid schizophrenic and had been so. I think he's the one that said he had this long history. Because as I read his testimony, he said he had had delusional problems since he was in early adolescence. He had a history from both his parents. I mean, he tracked it. The language that he used is very different from the language of Golden mm-hmm. in terms of his findings, because he was making a specific diagnosis, looking at paranoia and schizophrenia.
Absolutely.
And Ballinger, who was also a psychiatrist, also made very detailed findings about how he acted at the crime scene and what had occurred 6 months before.
Absolutely.
Versus Golden, who said he had been deteriorating.
Yes.
Would you like to comment? Because, I mean, the heart of the argument is that this testimony that he was deteriorating was before the jury when they made this decision of life or death. And so, is this just a matter of degrees? You know, are you saying that, you know, he could have gotten a better evaluation if he had had a psychiatrist, or is it substantive than that?
It's more substantive. It is partly a matter of persuasion. Doctors Coons and Ballinger and Price all had more specific examples because they had conducted a more thorough interview. So they had specific examples of this the nature of this illness. They had specific examples of how it affected his behavior at the time of the offense, and they did understand or try to convey what they believed was going on in Mr. Pruitt's mind. But it is also different in that schizophrenia is a biologically based illness. We know that there is a genetic component to it. It is a very devastating disease.
Is Pruitt currently taking medication to treat schizophrenia?
Currently?
Correct.
He will not take medication currently.
Of course, that's not unusual for schizophrenia.
It is not unusual, and it's not because it isn't prescribed. It's because
right.
He won't take.
So was there any testimony that in the death penalty phase, there was no testimony about what causes schizophrenia, or that it was organic or a missing chemical or anything like that?
No, there was none. There was no testimony describing the nature of delusion and how serious that is. This is a disease, and in this manifestation is alters his perception of reality, and he can't help it. He doesn't know he's sick, and he was never properly treated for it.
If he were that sick, could he be convicted?
Well, the insanity defense is, if that's what you're talking about, is
insanity is a legal term, not a medical term.
Much more specific than when a mental illness is used as mitigation. He has to completely not know the difference.
Well, I asked you the question under the theory that since you've delved into this so severely, you know something about it. Did the record sustain sufficient evidence of his mental illness or mental disability that it could have been raised as a defense to the murder?
You know, it wasn't a claim, and therefore it wasn't addressed specifically with the experts. I think the experts would have had to have been asked those specific questions. So I'm sorry, that's punting, but it wasn't raised as a claim. Schizophrenia has been used in that regard. So, in conclusion, I see my time has run. So if you have no further questions, I respectfully ask the court to reverse Mr. Pruitt's death sentence, either under our first argument that Mr. Pruitt is mentally retarded and the state court's decision was unreasonable, or that his death sentence is reversed because counsel's ineffectiveness in failing to present evidence of his schizophrenia.
And you still have some time left with rebuttal, and we asked you a lot of questions, so you'll have some time afterward.
And we assume that you stand on the other arguments in your briefs.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Mr. Martin.
May it please the court. The Indiana Supreme Court and the Indiana courts gave a very full and fair opportunity to Mr. Pruitt to litigate his claim that he was mentally retarded. As the court is well aware, a great deal of evidence was placed into the record with respect to this question. Petitioner's argument today is something that would be more appropriately directed to the trial court in the first instance because...
Well, she argued, I think maybe the most troubling thing in her argument to me was her contention that the Indiana Supreme Court was unduly deferential to the trial judge's determinations. I think you need to focus on that.
I think the character of the court's decision in general, first of all, Your Honor, shows that that's not the case. The trial court judge...
The character in what sense?
The state Supreme Court looked very critically at what was done and what the premises were for the trial court's conclusions. And in so doing, as the court is aware, the Indiana Supreme Court felt that a preponderance of the evidence standard was required for answering this question. State Supreme Court also went on to find that Dr. Schmedlin's manner of applying the adaptive functioning prong wasn't consistent with what Indiana law would require, which would be a general conformance with clinical standards. And the trial court seemed to have relied on Dr. Schmedlin's methodology. They said that this would not support the trial court's findings, and so they did not affirm on that portion.
So you're saying that the lack of deference on the adaptive functioning reflects on the indication that the Supreme Court was not deferential on the intellectual disability portion?
Your Honor, I think that they objectively looked at the evidence that the trial court relied upon. We have a test score on a reliable measure by every expert's account that rendered a 76, which placed, including the standard measurement of error, Mr. Pruitt above two standard deviations below the mean, which is the clinical definition of substandard intellectual functioning. There was a great deal of evidence presented about which scores to credit, which scores to give weight to, and which not. The trial court credited that score and other evidence of the petitioner's intellectual functioning and found that he did not function below two standard deviations below the mean, as that Wechsler score indicated.
Well, he had a number of IQ scores below the 75-point cutoff, and I think he only had one above it. Is that right?
Well, Your Honor.
And doesn't that indicate that he had sub-average intellectual functioning?
No, it doesn't, Your Honor. And if I could just summarize what the scores meant. Initially, it should be noted that he filed his notice of a mental retardation defense and within a couple of weeks afterward withdrew it, because that is when his expert, Dr. Olvera, administered the WAIS-3 and got the result of a full-scale score of 76.
And was that when he was on medication?
He was, by the expert's accounts, taking Trilofan at that time,
right.
Your Honor.
And didn't that medication assist him in focusing and being calm during the course of the test? Isn't that part of the point of that medication?
There was speculative testimony about what the effects of that medication might have been on that test.
And so in these other tests, there's no evidence that he was on any medication, the ones where he fell below the line.
I don't think there's evidence in the record of medication.
Who did the speculation?
Dr. Golden did. I believe Dr. Hudson, which were his two experts at the mental retardation hearing. And
they speculated that the medication might affect the score?
They speculated that he might have been able, as Judge Williams suggested, been able to concentrate better, create a better test environment. But the expert also expressed the fact that it didn't artificially elevate his IQ or make him be able to perform better than his IQ would allow.
It didn't make him any smarter, no matter how much medicine he took.
That's right, Your Honor.
Now, what about this Flynn effect?
Pity.
Sorry.
Again,
Flynn
Your Honor.
Flynn effect in assessing the IQ scores.
There was no... I think it's very interesting. Dr. Keyes, who petitioner touts, and the state doesn't agree, has a lot, or the state does not disagree, rather, has a lot of expertise and a lot of experience in treating, assessing, testing individuals with mental retardation. Dr. Keyes said on post-conviction review that he had never adjusted a test score downward to account for the Flynn effect. And the case law would suggest that when we see this happen, it's in hearings where an Atkins claim is being raised. Clinicians simply do not attribute that much significance to the effect of Flynn and Flynn's theory on an actual individual test measurement score. If you look at Dr. Golden's testimony, where he goes into great detail and he exhibits a great deal of sophistication about his expertise and his knowledge about test measures and how they're conducted and how they're scored, I think that it's fair to say that he basically characterizes them as a very good estimate, and depending on how reliable the measure is, the better the estimate. But it's an estimate. There are various ways which these things can be scored, and the actual number doesn't necessarily mean that a person is or is not mentally retarded.
Let me ask you about Pruitt's schooling, because he was in a school where they didn't have the resources to properly diagnose him, correct?
I think that's probably a fair thing to say, Your Honor.
And that didn't come in, that testimony, did it?
There was testimony that the school's resources didn't allow for a full range of, say, special ed courses. I think that the testimony made it fairly clear that there were limited resources at the school. If I may, Your Honor, at this time, point out that Mr. Pruitt had elementary school teachers testify about how he never cared about school. One of them expressly said that he didn't take testing seriously, and that he just didn't have any interest in school. Now, as that relates to these test scores, as Ms. Donnelly suggested, group-administered test scores aren't reliable. The two Lords Thorndikes that were administered while Pruitt was in elementary school were group-administered measures. So what we have is this full-scale IQ of 76 that his own expert obtained when he was hired by the defense.
So I have the same question for you with respect to Florida versus Hall. Do you think that it might have any bearing on this case, and should we hold off on ruling until we get that decision? Expect it sometime in June.
Your Honor, if the court would feel more comfortable, I certainly wouldn't recommend against it. I feel like, though, we're dealing with an apple here to an orange in Hall, because Hall is concerned with arbitrariness. And here, I think that the way that the Indiana Supreme Court looked at this is somewhat the antithesis of being arbitrary. They're trying to look at all of the facts and circumstances to give context to what the scores mean.
Okay, I understand your position. Let me ask you this. If Pruitt showed signs that he was paranoid schizophrenic before trial, and trial counsel never investigated whether he was, why isn't the Indiana Supreme Court's decision unreasonable?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I have to take
issue. Because you agree, don't you, that he was never, Golden was never asked, trial counsel never asked Golden to examine him for schizophrenia or any other doctor to examine him, and he never really asked, the whole point for Golden was to look at mental retardation versus a mental illness, true?
No. I think that Golden's responses to questions and cross-examination at the penalty phase make it very clear that he was serving both purposes.
But was he asked to do that? Did he did a report, didn't he?
Yes, he did
do
a report.
Okay, and did the report have a section about paranoid schizophrenia?
I don't think, Your Honor, that he rendered a discrete report with respect to mental illness. But, as Your Honor noted...
So he was not asked to look at his mental status from a mental illness standpoint. It did come out, as counsel said, during cross-examination, but I'm talking about it because normally in the expert report you have all the diagnoses of the expert.
It came out in direct and on cross-examination, Your Honor, and I guess that's what I was getting to. I take some issue with the characterization of what Dr. Golden did and what his testimony was here. He went into fair detail about and use the precise language that what Mr. Pruitt suffered from was, as the court noted, schizotypal personality disorder, and that this was among the spectrum of schizophrenia offenses. He expressly told the jury that Mr. Pruitt had previously been diagnosed with schizophrenia. All of the experts, including those that testified at post-conviction, which, by the way, I want to remind the court that the fact finder, the post-conviction court, found that those witnesses weren't as credible and deserving of weight as the ones that testified at trial.
But in terms of the organic nature of paranoid schizophrenia or the discussing the access or the differences between the schizotypal personality versus paranoid schizophrenia, that he didn't draw that distinction.
He did, Your Honor. He talked about the differences.
Where in the testimony?
In his penalty phase testimony, he talked about the differences between full-blown schizophrenia and schizotypal personality disorder. When I was alluding to the testimony of the post-conviction experts a moment ago,
He talked about paranoid schizophrenia because I thought that he said that he had a history of decompensating in the last 6 months. And that means a personality disorder like a schizotypal or schizoid personality becomes psychotic, and he talked about crossing the line.
Right. Decompensating from a non-delusional state into a floridly delusional state, that kind of thing. And I guess when I was getting to the post-conviction experts, they all agreed that post-conviction, or that schizophrenia, rather, is a thing that waxes and wanes, that there can be a pre-morbid state where one suffers from schizotypal personality disorder, and it devolves, decompensates, if you will, into full-blown schizophrenia. The symptomology and the experience of delusions can also recede. All of the testimony acknowledges this, and I think it's interesting that we have post-conviction experts that talk to Pruitt's family members 4 years after the fact are going to say that Dr. Golden missed the right diagnosis there when he admitted that he was in the spectrum of schizophrenic offense. But
the post-conviction experts didn't just rely on the testimony, on the history and what his parents said, did they?
Predominantly, Your Honor, they did. I mean, they did. They had a one-on-one with Mr. Pruitt. But they didn't have any objective...
And just remind me, did Dr. Golden have the one-on-one with him?
Yes, and that's what Dr. Golden said. There's something in the petitioner's reply brief where they say Dr. Golden was asked by the jury what was in Pruitt's head, and I don't remember what the exact questions were that they alluded to in their reply brief. But Dr. Golden was asked about what Pruitt was thinking and what was going through his head at the time of the offense. Dr. Golden said that Pruitt didn't share anything more with him than what Pruitt indicated to him was already a matter of record. And he gave a statement to police where he told the interviewing officer that he'd shot Deputy Starnes because he didn't want to go to prison for possessing the stolen guns.
Well, he took care of that problem, all right.
You know, Atkins says that exempting the mentally retarded from the punishment, the death penalty, will not affect the cold calculation that precedes the decision of other potential murderers. Here we have an individual who was monitoring police frequencies that were tuned into the Marion, or the Morgan County Sheriff's Department when he was pulled over.
And I think at least one of the psychiatrists said that that was a part of his paranoia.
Well, Dr. Golden suggested that, which again, Your Honor, goes back to the fact that trial counsel presented to this jury what was available from a very reasonable investigation to try to convince
them. Can you think
that.
Of any strategic reason why counsel would not have Pruitt evaluated for schizophrenia when it came out in the pretrial proceeding?
I think Dr. Golden did evaluate him for schizophrenia. That's how he was able to tell the jury that he had distinguished the schizotypal personality disorder from full-blown schizophrenia because he was looking at those things.
So you don't see a distinction from being asked as an expert to evaluate someone for a mental illness so that kind of request doesn't, in your view, need to be made by counsel.
Well, Your Honor,
before the examination, so that when the doctor examines the person, they have in mind, oh, there are two things I'm looking for here, mental retardation or mental illness. But as long as they get on the stand on direct and cross and say it, then that's sufficient. You don't think there's a problem with that, especially when it comes out?
The short answer is I don't think there's a problem here. I just want to...
But you will agree that normally when experts are contracted and they are given some direction or guidance in terms of what kind of evaluation they need to make. You agree with that?
I do, Your Honor. And I think here what you
is
have...
Is it possible, do you think, to examine on a very limited basis and just look for this and ignore the broken leg or something? You know, is there any way a psychiatrist or psychologist can examine a patient and ignore the obvious problems of, say, schizophrenia while looking for something else?
I don't, Your Honor. And I guess what I want to point out is, obviously, Dr. Golden had been provided with all the relevant Bureau of Prison and Indiana Department of Correction records, which contained this information about the prior diagnosis of schizophrenia. So they were providing him with the information that he needed to conduct an appropriate inquiry.
And so then your view would be that if the jury is told that Pruitt had a personality disorder been told that he suffered from schizophrenia, I mean, just in terms of the diagnosis, your position is that it doesn't matter here because the behavior that the post-conviction doctors as well as Golden, the behavior was before the jury, and so the diagnosis itself really didn't matter.
The behavior was before the jury, Your Honor, and an explanation of how the behaviors related to what Dr. Golden considered the correct clinical diagnosis. I mean, it would have been unnecessary.
He didn't diagnose paranoid schizophrenia.
He did not.
And so...
Did he rule it out?
He did, a professional rule out, Your Honor.
Yes.
I don't know that he expressed it in that way. Although I will also mention this about Dr. Golden. At times when he was talking about mental retardation concepts, he would note that something was friendlier or easier for a layperson to understand, and that was why he explained it in those terms. But here, he talks about...
He did conclude that during the relevant period, Pruitt suffered from had a schizotypal personality disorder, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Which has some paranoid dimensions to it.
Correct, Your Honor. And he also... pointed out that another professional had diagnosed him with schizophrenia. He didn't state that Pruitt would not possibly devolve into... He explained how that condition can decompensate into schizophrenia. And what we have here are experts brought in post-conviction 4 years later saying that they would have known what stage in that fluctuating circumstance Pruitt was in better than Dr. Golden did when he was aware of all the pertinent facts and circumstances. Now, the record doesn't have, at trial, powerful evidence of Mr. Pruitt operating on some, under some kind of delusion. As I noted, the facts of the crime itself, the fact that he conducted this break-in to this store, found an alternative way to get in a door when he found out he couldn't break it open by removing the hinge pins. Then he's monitoring police traffic. He's telling the police officer, yes, I shot Deputy Starnes because I didn't want to go to prison for these stolen guns. He also told the interviewing police officer that he was facing 3D felonies and that he was therefore facing exposure to 9 years in prison. That's a correct statement of Indiana law, and he was correct about the amount of exposure in terms of incarceration that he faced. This is not the uncalculating person with poor impulse control that Atkins contemplates.
Well, calculation and paranoid delusions are not exclusive from each other. You could be suffering from paranoid delusions and still be calculating in your conduct.
That's true, Your Honor. And I guess when I was talking a moment ago, I guess I was back to mental retardation.
That gets to the point that troubles me because, you know, whether the jury would have bought, you know, that he was acting because he was delusional and he was schizophrenic, it is one thing. You know, that's one thing. But the issue of the jury understanding the nature of his condition and the impact it might have had on his behavior, I mean, that to me gets to the heart of the question.
I think the Indiana Supreme Court very reasonably found that Dr. Golden did that for the jury. And based on the facts of what happened when he was arrested and Deputy Starnes was shot, I think it was, as trial counsel presented this information through Dr. Golden, it related to Mr. Pruitt possibly acting on paranoia, as Your Honor suggests. To suggest that he's acting on a florid, delusional misperception of reality was a non-starter in terms of persuasion. Trial counsel very reasonably declined to go that route. When you've got somebody that knows that the police are looking for him because of the weapons he stole, and he gets out, he tells Deputy Starnes as he draws his weapon, you know, put your hands up, put your hands behind your neck, and walk away from this and nobody has to get hurt. Knowing what he's faced, knowing what he's done, knowing that the police know because he's listening to the radio traffic as Deputy Starnes is calling in his information, that's not delusional. Paranoid, perhaps, but not delusional like a schizophrenic would likely be. So, trial counsel presented the information through Dr. Golden that he was suffering from something that might be a little more believable to the jury than full-blown delusional schizophrenia, that he was paranoid because he had a schizotypal personality.
Now, Dr. Goldman was a psychologist, and I think two of the experts that were called post-conviction were psychiatrists, correct?
I think that's correct, Your Honor. I know Dr. Golden's a neuropsychologist. Dr. Coons, I know, is a psychiatrist. I believe that Dr. Ballinger is also a psychiatrist. I'm sorry, I should know that, Your Honor. But for the purposes of evaluating schizophrenia, it doesn't. That's not the exclusive province of a psychiatrist, as opposed to a psychologist. Psychologists.
Well, as a matter of fact, lay people can be expert witnesses in that area.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Lay people can give an opinion as to whether they think who's exhibiting the symptoms that you can diagnose as being part of paranoia or schizophrenia.
That's true, Your Honor. Yeah. Your Honors, if there are no further questions, we would just urge this court to affirm this judgment as it was carefully rendered. It's consistent with the general command of Atkins not to execute persons mentally retarded and to come up with a a means of determining this that are generally comporting with clinical guidelines. That was done here. Moreover, his trial attorneys conducted an exhaustive investigation into the defense and presented it ably to the jury. Does the court have further questions?
Do you agree that Pruitt was on, I think we went in, on medication when he was in jail? We went over that, because that's when he got that higher score, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Anyone Thank else? You.
Thank you. I wanted to just emphasize, with respect to Dr. Golding's testimony at the penalty phase, Dr. Golding went through several possible diagnoses. He never came to a specific conclusion about any. He said he thought probably personality disorder, not otherwise specified. He did talk about schizotypal personality disorder, but he wasn't certain he had that either. He was wishy-washy throughout. He wasn't able to give an accurate description of what...
Well, medical diagnosis, except for some things that are obvious, is always sort of wishy-washy. I believe that the symptoms are that sort of thing.
Well,
it's not exact science, is it?
It has a very specific diagnostic criteria, and I believe the three doctors who testified at post-conviction were not wishy-washy
My question was, it's not an exact science. If your answer is it is, then you're brand new here because nobody else in the world believes that.
No, it is not.
You look at the evolution of the DSM.
Yes.
Things change. Categories are shifted and moved and so forth. Particularly when you're dealing with this area of schizotypal, schizophrenia, and the gray area in between.
Right.
Very difficult to diagnose.
Well, it is difficult, and it is as my colleague pointed out, schizotypal is often the prodromal phase of schizophrenia. A person has these symptoms and then they develop. People don't become psychotic overnight. But in this case, there was ample evidence that could have been presented to the jury that this man suffered from very severe delusions. He thought he was being controlled and everyone was being controlled by alien beings. That is really, really different than what Mr. Martin just described. Well, he was kind of paranoid and listening to the radio. That is a very different picture. And it was something that was absolutely beyond his control. And it was something that could have been treated but was not. And I think those are very powerful mitigating factors for a jury to hear.
And then when he was in the interview with Golden, did he say that he had been controlled by aliens? Because I can't...
Not with Golden. Golden didn't interview him for that purpose. Golden came in and conducted the testing for mental retardation. Golden did not sit and ask him questions, probing questions to try to discover this. All three other experts that did come to interview him for that purpose, all of them reported the exact same thing.
This is post-conviction, the three.
Yes, exactly.
But all Golden did was administer the test, so there was no back and forth, no dialogue, other than you need to take this test or...
Other than that's what he said, and that's the basic interview, coming in, saying hello, taking notice of his immediate status.
So nothing in terms of his history.
Correct.
Now, Golden had the records from the Department of Correction, and tell me what else Golden had when he conducted
Golden had went through all of the Department of Correction records and the prior diagnoses that had been made in the Department of Corrections, and that included an earlier diagnosis of schizotypal, and it included a more recent diagnosis of schizophrenia. So he had those records. He also had records regarding the crime.
So
he
then,
about that.
Since he came in and he just conducted the test, he just wasn't asking any questions in this area at all.
That wasn't his purpose, no. And he was specifically, again, he was asked about that. No, he did not do that. He was there to do the test. I believe my time is out, so if you
well,
have...
You're up when your red light goes
on. Oh, I'm sorry.
The trap door opens. And
okay.
Then
regarding mental retardation... It's difficult under AEDPA. It is. This is not someone who had, like Mr. Hall, a series of tests, none of which are 70 or below. This is not someone who had an 85. This man, the majority of his tests are all below the threshold. The expert who administered the test and all these other experts said that 76 is absolutely not inconsistent. I mean, it's like...
I think you could concede that everybody said he was retarded. The question is whether, as a result of the retardation, he could not be executed. I think that's what we boil down to.
Well, I would argue under Atkins, if he's retarded, then he cannot be executed.
That's what I said. Right. You weren't listening to me, or else okay. I wasn't making myself okay. clear. I said the issue in this case is he so severely retarded that he cannot be executed, period.
I would have to disagree because what? Atkins did not say so severely retarded. They excluded
just
his class.
Just say retarded. So, they just said mentally retarded. So somebody who's vaguely retarded cannot be executed.
Not only that, but in Penry, the court specifically acknowledged that almost all Atkins, or, well, they didn't say Atkins, almost all defendants who would be raising a claim of mental retardation were mildly mentally retarded.
Huh.
So if you were to exclude
killing people is not exactly a manifestation of great intelligence.
Certainly is not. Especially not the circumstances in this case. They were pretty outrageous.
Sometimes there's a couple of people you'd like to pop off just because they shouldn't be there, but
okay.
We restrain ourselves, we who are not retarded.
Okay. Well, I would conclude with, again, I believe that Atkins did not qualify. Anyone who is mentally retarded should not be executed. I believe the evidence overwhelmingly, clearly and convincingly.
I pause to say I think you did a splendid job preparing the brief, and you did a splendid job of arguing. And I appreciate it.
And both counsel did an excellent job. And then my second question, on this second issue of the investigation, I know you're standing on your brief, but you are still vigorously pursue that claim as well.
Yes. On the, you mean ineffective assistance of counsel for investigating the mental retardation?
Right.
Yes. We are standing on our brief.
For the
yes.
mental illness?
Yes.
All right. All right. Thank you both, counsel. Fine argument. And we'll take the case under advisement.
Good job, too.
Court will be in recess.